This is WBBN-FM, the Worldwide Business Brokers Network, the official podcast of WorldwideBusinessBrokers.com, where business sellers find their buyers, where business buyers find their targets, and where anyone can learn to become a professional business broker. And now, your host, Joe Caffrey.
Well, hello again, everybody. This is Joe Caffrey coming to you with another podcast from the Worldwide Business Brokers, WBBN, the Worldwide Business Brokers Network. Thanks to all of you for joining me today. I really appreciate you tuning in. Many of the issues that I try to address in these podcasts and on my blog are based on questions we receive through our website or our social media feeds from blog readers and podcast listeners like yourselves, and we touch on a couple of them today. My chat today is with Greg Gill, who has been brokering and advising businesses on the East Coast of the U.S. since 2010. In fact, Greg is a member of the Worldwide Business Brokers System. The topics we touch on today will be of interest to anyone that wants to become a business broker, as well as to any business owners as they start to consider an exit. So without further ado, let's join the conversation. Here's myself and Greg. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderfully. Thank you very much.
We've been trying to get you on here for a while, and I'm glad we were finally able to coordinate our schedules so that this could happen. I think that your experiences over the past few years as a business broker would probably be of significant interest to a number of our listeners. So I'm glad you could make it.
Thank you.
We want to talk a little bit today about several aspects. We're not going to go into great detail, but several aspects of business brokering, the types of markets there are out there, the size of businesses, the trends that we're seeing, both for inquiries to buy businesses and the number of businesses that we see coming to market, what a financing look like, things of that nature. So I'm going to start by trying to identify for our listeners what we consider to be two distinct markets, one being the Main Street market, essentially made up of mom-and-pop businesses, generally one or two locations, possibly revenue as high as $500,000, maybe $700,000, maybe $1 million. And then the middle market tier, and that's where we define that as a larger business with revenue of between $1 million, maybe up to about $20 million. So where do you work in both of those markets, or do you specialize in one of those two?
Well, pardon me. Southeastern Virginia, where I work, is sort of an interesting market because you don't have much in the way of middle market companies here. Got a lot of mom and pops, and I certainly don't turn up my nose at mom and pops. They are needing of my services, and so I represent a fair number of mom and pops. Interestingly, though, at the present time, I have listings for two companies in excess of $1 million in revenues. So I kind of work both, but the chances of me due to my area of going into maybe more than $10 million sales and revenues would be a little slim, and I'd have to reach out from this area to a degree to do that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. The mom and pop market in your area mostly consists of retail, or is there a broad mix of industries?
A broad mix of industries, very definitely. For example, right now I'm representing a restoration and remediation company, and that would definitely be at the upper end of the mom and pop market. So it just varies. It just varies.
Yeah, I would imagine that almost any market will have essentially the same industry mix as any other market would have. Healthcare, even this restoration company that you're representing, most markets would probably have similar business industries represented. How active is your market? Have you been seeing, you know, we had just last week, our last episode, we had Dave Moore on from, he's a SBA lender in Virginia, and he was talking about the difference in traffic that he's seen since the election. Everybody that he's been talking to seems to be more optimistic and confident, and more loan requests are coming in, which suggests that more people are trying to buy businesses. Have you seen anything along those lines? Any trend?
Well, so far we're just a month, a little more than a month from the inauguration. I can't say that I've really seen a big uptick in terms of listings. Now, I have had a few more potential sellers giving me a call, but once I have an opportunity to sit down with them and counsel them, we'll see whether they lead to listings or not.
Mm-hmm. We've heard from a number of brokers, and we've seen on our website that there has been an uptick in traffic. But in the brokerage business, you don't get a listing at that first meeting, do you?
No, and I prefer not to. I want to get to know the company and the sellers before it progresses, and of course do a valuation on the enterprise before it progresses to a listing agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You need to know who you're dealing with. That's good. But your background is, though in finance, it is in the chemical industry, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that right?
Yes. I spent some time in public accounting, and then I went to work for a chemical company out in the Midwest, was offered a job, and moved out to the East Coast with a very prominent chemical company out here specializing in agricultural chemicals. I was with that company and worked my way up to senior vice president and chief financial officer when it got acquired. And so I left the company and amazingly kind of fell into becoming an entrepreneur. Some of the other executives from that company also left, and we decided that we would buy our own company, which we amazingly were able to accomplish during the leveraged buyout time of the late 80s. And we accomplished a leveraged buyout and bought that company, which we sold 2.5 years later at a nice gain. Thereafter, that same group founded another company, and we took that company up to being a public company, of which I was president, and then sold that. It just repeated itself a number of times until most of my partners in those ventures retired, and so I kind of found a couple of new partners, and we started, and then I sold my interest in that company in 2010. I did not want to retire, so I kind of thought to myself, what am I good at? And I thought, well, what I'm good at is starting or buying companies and selling them. Only I'd been doing it for my own account or our partnership's account. And so I decided to, at that time, as you know, become a business broker under the Worldwide Business Brokers umbrella. And so I've been doing this for the last 6 years and have found it very satisfying.
Well, that's an interesting road. to say the least, As you made this transition, now most of these businesses that you were in before had something to do with chemicals and that kind of industry, did it not?
Yes, although I started with a partner, a company that made slacks for tall women. And that
seriously,
and we had that. We were selling over the internet. We had that for a couple of years, and then he wanted to move on to other things, so we sold that company.
Well, given your background in the chemical industry, did you consider at one time? And I know you and I talked about this a number of years ago. Did you consider at one point specializing in your business brokerage practice in that industry where you have contacts?
No, I thought about it, but I have discovered that I am, I don't know how to say this, but it just is not something I wanted to do. The chemical companies that are left standing, and a lot of them have, there's been a big consolidation in agricultural chemicals especially, and they are at the point now where there's just not much more consolidation that can happen. And so I have chosen not to specialize in that.
I can see why. Well, you know, let's shift gears here just for a second and get a little bit more specific on some of the things that you encounter and some of the issues you deal with as a business broker. And we've talked in the past about the difficulty of getting good numbers, particularly from people who are running smaller businesses, sales of less than $1 million, as an example. Do you still find that to be the prevalent situation, or have things improved since we talked about it a few years ago?
They've improved a little bit, but I still encounter, amazingly, a number of small businesses wherein the owner, now if there are owners, it's a different situation, but if there's a single owner where the accounting records are not that great, and in that situation, I always see if I cannot provide some counseling or consulting to improve how numbers are handled, and more importantly, how the owner views the numbers. The most disconcerting thing that happens is when I'm out on the initial interview with a potential seller, and I say, well, to the owner, well, tell me about your financial statements, and the owner says, pointing over to another office, well, that's where my bookkeeper is. You have to ask her about my numbers. That is a red flag for me, because owners of small businesses simply have to know their numbers. And that doesn't mean just basically reviewing the tax return that the outside accountant prepares on an annual basis. The owner should be on top of his numbers on a weekly and monthly basis.
What do you think drives this problem? Do you think it's laziness? People put too much trust in their bookkeeper. They just don't want to. They don't have a knack or a ken for doing some numbers. What do you think drives it?
I think it is a combination of a number of things. And I hate to sound chauvinistic on this, but I think there's some machismo that's going on here. You'll have an individual who thinks that it's not necessary for him to do that, or it's almost demeaning for him to do that. And of course, again, as I said, that's a red flag, because you've got to know your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to answer my questions on your numbers. And more importantly, you've got to be able to answer a buyer's question.
Let's use an example here. If you were in, you get a call, your office gets a call from a potential client. They want to sell their business. You arrange to have a meeting. You head on over there, and you sit down with this owner, and the owner tells you essentially what you just described. In order to get my numbers, you're going to have to talk to my bookkeeper. How do you work around that? What do you tell the owner at that point, and what's your operation method after that?
Well, I will talk to the bookkeeper. And if I find out that a decent job is being done by that bookkeeper, I may proceed with the owner and even list the business. But if I find out that the only way they ever have a feel for the numbers is after their outside accountant gets done processing those numbers annually, then I say, well, we need to make some changes here, folks. If you want me to represent you a year from now, I will do that, assuming that we iron out other issues. But over the next year, this is what I want you to do on a weekly or monthly basis so that you understand your numbers, I understand your numbers, and we can certainly see to it that a potential buyer will understand your numbers.
Exactly. And what that incidentally is one of the aspects of our training is we can, by doing so, brokers can pick up a year's or more worth of consulting work in assisting a business owner like that who's having trouble with their numbers. And we can get in there and we can do some work to help them straighten that stuff out and get paid for it at the same time. And it's also, at the end of that process, it's also very easy to get comfortable with the numbers that we already know.
That's right.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, one of the things that we're faced with in the U.S., in the upcoming year is probably going to be increases in interest rates. The Fed increased rates at the end of 2015 and in their guidance suggested that there will be three more roughly quarter point increases over the next month, so in 2017. Do you think that this will have much of an impact on the business, brokerage business? Do you think it will stall sales, cause any sales that are in the due diligence period to run off the rails?
I don't think so. I think we're talking about quarter point increases, and I think a well-financed buyer will have options, and so I don't believe three-quarter point increases are going to cause any damage at all. What I think is positive is that there's considerable talk right now about modifying some of the provisions of Dodd-Frank. And I think to the extent that especially regional banks, the reserve requirements, and some of the other issues of Dodd-Frank are eased a little bit, I think that could have a very positive impact on buyers obtaining financing.
I agree with that. And most of the chatter that I hear also agrees with that. So that's very encouraging. Let's see here. We get a lot of questions on business brokering over the year, and both from our podcast and our blogs and just our website. And one of the things that I think would be interesting to share with our listeners is maybe one of your deals. So don't identify it, of course, but maybe a deal that was a lot of fun or enjoyable, and maybe a deal that was perhaps less so. Can you share one of those with us?
Well, one of my deals that was the most fun, actually, was selling a potting soil company. And thanks to some of my experiences in ag chemicals, I had some sense of that industry, and I dealt with a sellers who were very informed about their numbers, and as a result, I had a high level of confidence in their numbers, and they appreciated what I was doing for them. And the buyer was sophisticated, and he drove a hard deal, but it was interesting putting that deal together, because it was a buyer, the sellers were in the Mid-Atlantic area, and the buyer was out of upstate New York, and they got along well, but there was some culture shock there, if you can imagine that. And so it was an intriguing deal.
I've got to interrupt here just for a second. When many people, most of our listeners perhaps, hear a potting soil company, they would possibly think of the Corner Garden Center that you might visit on a Saturday afternoon. What were the revenues of this company, to give our listeners a sense of scale?
They were well in excess of $1 million. And they didn't sell to the garden centers. They sold to nurseries. So they had bulk truckloads or truckloads going out with bulk bags, so it was a good operation.
Well, that should clear things up. I can't imagine the garden centers down the street operating quite like that. That's great. Well, let's see. One of the things that we get asked about a lot, we get these emails all the time asking us if we, our brokers, would consider co-broking. And part of our marketing to individual business owners is that we have co-brokering arrangements with more than 500 independent business brokers and M&A specialists in North America. What are your thoughts on co-broking? You've had a couple of deals that either went through with a co-broke or there was a co-broker involved and the deal did not go through with his buyer. What are your thoughts?
I don't have any problems with co-broking at all. I do have a problem with certain brokers who don't necessarily measure up, I don't think, to our standards. But if I've got another broker out there who brings a buyer or a seller to the table, and he's reputable and wants the same things that I do, it doesn't bother me to co-broke at all. I mean, I'm here to serve my client. And if I can serve my client through a co-broking arrangement, so be it.
Exactly. In the real estate business, there's always the expression that 50% of some commission is better than 100% of none. And that's a practice we try to follow as well. Let's see. We've got... we're getting close to the end of our time here, but I wanted to touch base on a significant event that's beginning to unfold, mostly in North America, but with only a slightly lesser impact in Europe and South America. And it's being referred to in the U.S. as the Silver Tsunami. And we have, which is defined as the number of baby boomers who are retiring, and those that own businesses have to sell those businesses. We've done a blog post on that recently, and for you guys out there in listener land, there'll be a link to that post in the show notes after we're finished here and this interview goes live. But Greg, in the meantime, what are your thoughts on the silver tsunami?
Well, I think it affects us in two ways. One, you have more sellers who are getting ready to retire. There's no doubt about that. But it also affects us. As you know, I've got two listings right now in home health care, because home health care has become a very attractive market for buyers. The silver tsunami is leading to the retirement, or let me put it this way, 10,000 people in the United States hit 65 every day. And they, as they age, they are going to need more and more health care. Health care is being delivered by many strata within the health care industry, but the firing line is personal home care, which is a very, very attractive place for buyers to come into because they got demographics on their side, really big time demographics on their side.
Well, we're seeing a lot of that as well. I think that there's going to be a substantial number of businesses. In the blog that we just posted, there's a link to an article in the Washington Post that suggests that 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day, and that figure will continue until 2029, another 12 or 13 years. So the number of businesses that we expect to come onto the market as a result of this is substantial, and it's going to have a long-lasting impact. So from that standpoint, I think that it's a great time to be a business broker.
Yep.
So this is all great. This is all great. But before we go, Greg, I wanted to ask you this. To a business broker just starting out, what would you characterize as the most challenging aspect of getting started?
Well, you've got to get your name out there, if you will, in quotes, out there. And so you need to join professional organizations, the Chamber of Commerce in your area, things like that. But you also need to be very careful to build your business with a great reputation. And I think it's very easy to do that by just putting yourself in the buyer's shoes or the seller's shoes and think how you would like to be treated as a buyer or a seller. And perhaps the best way is when you get up from the signing table, the closing table, and both the buyer and the seller shake your hand and have a smile on their face. And if you do that, word's going to get around, and you're going to get more clients.
That's excellent advice. Excellent advice, and part of our training is the appearance of professionalism. You know, you don't want to go visit a client with holes in your jeans any more than that client would want you to represent them. And you wouldn't want to represent a business that had paint peeling off the outside of the building. So that's excellent advice. Well, Greg, I appreciate this. I really thank you for the time today. All of you out there in listener land, head over to our website, worldwidebusinessbrokers.com. Click on the podcast link at the very top and just subscribe. You'll get a notice when this goes live. So, Greg, thanks again.
Well, thank you, Joe. The same to you, and thanks for the discussion.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon. Well, there you are, ladies and gents, a discussion about some of the aspects of business brokering. While I hope this was helpful, if you have any questions or comments, head on over to the show notes page at worldwidebusinesspodcast.com/episode 9 and leave them in the comments section. While you're there, you'll find links and downloads for additional information about some of the topics we discussed in this podcast. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another conversation. If there is a topic you'd like to hear discussed, click the Contact Us button anywhere on our website and let me know about it. Let's start that conversation. Until next time, remember, always do the right thing by your client and customer. They're the ones that feed you. Keep well and enjoy what you do.
You've been listening to WBBN-FM, the Worldwide Business Brokers Network, the official podcast of WorldwideBusinessBrokers.com. If you want to sell your business, buy a business, or become a professional business broker, use the request information box nearby or visit WorldwideBusinessBrokers.com and start the conversation.